This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Maintaining bone strength is complex with no single solution. My patients who want to optimize their bone health have seen remarkable results with LiveMD as part of a comprehensive bone program. LiveMD is a Class 1 medical device cleared by the FDA. It creates a gentle, low-intensity vibration to benefit your musculoskeletal system. It's a safe, scientifically proven, and simple approach to maintaining musculoskeletal health and wellness. It really works, just 10 minutes per day. Go to livemd.us, that's livemd.us, to learn more about how LiveMD may improve your health. That's livemd.us. Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast for today. We're talking to Dr. Martha Herbert, who's a very important figure in the movement to discover more natural biomedical approaches to childhood developmental disorders. She's well qualified to do so because she is a pediatric neurologist and she's a neuroscientist at Mass General Hospital, professor of neurology at Harvard Medical School, and she's also author of The Autism Revolution, a book that you ought to get a hold of, and we'll give you information about that towards the end of this podcast. Are you the medical director of the Body Brain Resilience Center?
Well, I'm the co-director. Both of us are physicians. My partner is an internist, and I'm running the brain part and the research part. Because okay. we're doing practice-based research. We want to collect data on what we're actually doing. I have an obsession with documenting recovery. It really, you know, people are getting better. And I think there's incredibly important systems biology in there. The case has not been made that recovery actually happens very well. There's a lot of anecdotal reports. But, you know, the way medical research is conducted of testing the impact of one thing at a time in clinical trials, you're never going to recover anybody like that. So that's why the Documenting Hope movie, the tracking recovery prospectively that I'd mentioned, I really feel that we need a much more system science orientation mm-hmm. to looking at what really goes on when somebody actually gets better.
Yeah, you know what? The model,
it's not just one thing. It's
right,
not
the model
just
for research. The model for research is really designed to vet new drugs, because they want to say, well, all things being equal, will this drug versus a sugar pill make for a change? But, of course, we know that maybe just one intervention, like giving fish oil pills to a kid or maybe giving folate to a child, may or may not make a huge difference. But that combined with organic foods and probiotics and healing the gut and, you know, on and on, you know, all the different interventions together. And that's not currently the accepted scientific paradigm. It's like, well, let's try these things one by one by one by one. And then maybe, you know, you won't find anything. So, you know, kudos to you for doing that kind of research.
It's funny because I do consulting for a large residential facility for people with developmental serious disabilities in upstate New York. And they have a 62-acre biodynamic farm. The kids eat organic food. They exercise a lot. They watch their bowel regimens. They sleep. They have wonderful social supports. And so we're doing research to document the overall impact of this program. But what's really interesting is people will say, well, if you're doing diet and exercise and sleep, and how do you know which one works?
Exactly. Yeah.
And I'm like, what kind of a question is that? People aren't meant to improve their diet while they sit around, you know, surfing the television, you know, the cable television or the web and eating, you know. It's really about optimizing the system. It's really about optimizing all of the possible things that you can optimize, because we are also challenged, but especially people who've been hit harder, that the system needs all the help it can get.
Well, I have a
slide. I just want to mention this one
sure.
slide where brain cells are dumping trash from a neurodegenerative disease, and you can see the cells gobbling it up, and then you see a cell dumping it into a blood vessel. But the only way you can have that kind of cleanup process, according to the people who did that electron microscopy, is by very strong nutritional intervention. Otherwise, the status quo is to get worse.
So clearly that demonstrates that the body is involved in a continual process of getting rid, you know, taking out the garbage. Sleep itself is a process of taking out the garbage, we now understand. There's something called the glymphatic system, which is the system by which fluid circulates through the brain, not just through the ventricles, but throughout the brain. And when you sleep, literally, you take out the trash. And if you don't sleep enough or you have a sleep disturbance, you're not taking out the trash.
That's right. And this is new science. In the last 2 or 3 years, we didn't know about this fluid washing out of misfolded proteins and other trash at night, where the glial cells retract about, 65% smaller and make more room for the fluids. And I've even started to wonder this problem in autism, where a substantial number of people have large brains very early in life. Mm-hmm. And there's been theories that there's more cells or more neurons or failure to prune the development that usually goes on. But I'm wondering whether it's just backup of fluid. These kids don't sleep. They probably have all this viscous fluid, sticky stuff backing up their brains because of the toxicity and the nutritional problems. And insufficient minerals and others, in sulfur and other things, that they, and there's all this new science about the importance of the quality of the extracellular matrix and the things in it for the functioning of the whole organism, and that is. It's really of enormous practical importance because it means that you don't just pop a bunch of vitamins. Let's forget about drugs for a minute. Even people who do a lot of vitamins, sometimes they're really not that different from a pharmaceutical mentality if they're trying to do it with a targeted this and a targeted that alone. Because really the system doesn't work that way. It needs to be given all kinds of complex phytonutrients, nutrient density of the enormous diversity of substances that organisms have evolved to be able to create over eons that are what has kept them alive in the face of all kinds of challenges from the environment. I mean, evolution has kept an awful lot of organisms alive through mechanisms that we should be a lot more curious about in the scientific world. Unfortunately, at the present time, when people are curious about it, it's mainly to patent it. But if people would let go of that and look at what the multi-targeting from, let's just say plant-based, but it doesn't necessarily have to be only plant-based, foods. I mean, we have to go back and learn about systems and multi-targeting from many of the indigenous knowledge systems. And even look at what animals do, although it's harder and harder to find wild animals because of what we're, I'm not really exaggerating as much as I'd like to be exaggerating when I say that.
It's hard to know anymore what's natural. It's very hard to trace back to our true origins. Let's talk a little bit about preconceptual planning, because this is an area that you're interested in, because, obviously prevention is the better part of cure. Parents who are contemplating having kids, when should they start thinking about it, and what should they be doing? Should they be taking genetic tests, or should they be cleaning up their household environment, working on their diet? What are some of the elements that are involved in that?
Well, I would put at the top of the list, cleaning up the home environment and upgrading the food. There's also, you really need to find out whether you have important imbalances in your body. Some of the simple things that everybody should have checked are their vitamin D levels. Essential fatty acids need to be kept up. Thyroid health. All these things are very, very basic and known to dysregulate development if you don't fix it. I think that genetic tests, you have to be careful what you mean by genetic. Maybe you want to know that you have some scary mutation that gives you a very high risk for a certain sort of problem. But it also should be pointed out that people with genetic problems can still upgrade their lives tremendously. There's a movement going on out right now in the Down syndrome community of using the same kind of biomedical and nutritional treatments that have been going on in the autism movement. And the kids, when they start this really early, do so much remarkably better than what people have been considering the ceiling of possibility.
So your genes are not really your destiny. You can, you know, to some extent, they do create perhaps an upward ceiling for, you know, full realization of potential, but they can be modified. There's something called epigenetics.
Well, I think it's more than epigenetics because I think that a genetic mutation itself, even if you have a serious one, it's not just the gene product alteration that's the problem. I think that it probably creates a kind of chaotic situation in a much larger swath of metabolism than just the defect itself because of the interconnectedness of the networks. And so the system will respond with a lot of oxidative stress and inflammation beyond just the influence of a serious gene mutation. So what I'm saying is that, and in that case, somebody can function well enough that whether there's a ceiling or not doesn't matter because they're a creative, happy human being. And but in terms of other kinds of things, epigenetics, methylation, biochemistry, there's a lot you can learn from some fairly common genetic vulnerabilities that can help you make more organized choices about what you want to do. And then all of the lifestyle factors, the quality nutrition, the exercise, the sleep, the stress management, these are known to impact gene expression. So all of these levels from, again, the epigenetics to taking care of the kind of oxidative stress, inflammation, mitochondrial inefficiency that comes from all of these stressors, making sure your body isn't left to handle that with insufficient supplies, but really that you're maintaining your resiliency as much as you can all the time. All of these will provide an in utero environment for a developing embryo and fetus before birth that will create a resilient baby much more so than if you weren't paying attention to these things. And I you know, in preparation for the talks I recently gave on preconception, I read a whole lot of material, and I've come to the conclusion that while there may be value from various specific nutrients in the process of trying to prepare for an optimal pregnancy outcome, the overall resilience has a major influence in keeping things oriented in the best possible way. And also, even if you don't know about this until you're partway through the pregnancy or the child is an infant or whenever, it's always possible to take a turn toward more resilience at any point. And whenever you do that, you're going to have better outcomes at whatever stage of life you are, whether you're developing, not that you get to choose these things if you're in your mother's womb, but all the way through a shift toward more, you know, organic, natural insofar as we can get it, and not, you know, minimizing the toxic and degraded inputs or avoiding them altogether as much as possible. That's the path to the milieu, the kind of whole ambience of the body, the health of the cells in so many respects that we can't even enumerate. That's what we're trying to go for. And if you want to add on specific nutrients on top of that, if you need them, that will help. But the real story is in the broadest. Again, what you were brought up before was the kind of natural medicine, naturopathic approaches. That's what's going to do the most, in my opinion. I mean, I can't quote studies that tried to prove this. The way I come to my opinion is by reading hundreds of papers that support pieces of this and putting it together with common sense and saying that if you have common sense, you understand what's going on in the world right now, you're going to go for the healthy choices because you know what the alternative is. It's being sick. And who wants to be sick? And who wants to wind up in a hospital being sick? And really, we have a lot of power over whether we get sick or whether that doesn't happen to us. I mean, bad things happen, but you really have control over your risks.
No question.
Many of them.
So you think that you place a lot of importance on the gut as being a source of, I mean, not the end-all and be-all, but the intestinal milieu, what happens inside our microbiome. This does have a profound influence on outcomes, and it's actually a modifiable risk factor, right?
Yeah. Our microbiome is so amazing, and we should be cherishing it and nourishing it in ways that really mean a really, really big lifestyle shift. I mean, I just think of more and more people writing things on this and on the massive lifestyle changes that we really need in order to both keep ourselves healthy and keep the planet viable. We're messing with the microbiome, not just in our guts, but in the soil. All of the chemical pesticides and fertilizers, they reduce the complexity of organisms in the soil. So I actually inherited a farm, and one of my father's friends told me he went organic, and if he walks around in the winter, his soil feels very soft, and he goes on his neighbor's land, and the texture just completely changes. Mm-hmm. You know, we haven't appreciated the value of the complex fungal networks in the soil. There's so much about the microorganisms that has been keeping us alive, and we just haven't been aware or grateful enough. And so we can start out now by taking probiotics and eating fermented food, and avoiding trashy foods like sugar that feed the opportunistic pathogens in the gut. But, you know, we also need to expand our perspective to all of the other things that we're doing that don't make sense. Like, you know, what do we do with human waste? Mixing it with toxic chemicals. And then with all of the antibiotics and all of the drug products, you know, we're causing pressures, selection pressures, creating the potential for gene swapping and encouragement of resistant organisms and novel infections and so forth. So many of the things that we take for granted as sources of our convenience are actually contributing to a further degradation of the personal and the global microbiome. So it's a huge issue that goes beyond just the ecology within each of us, even though I'm just happy to see more and more people hearing about that, even, you know, on the conventional side of medicine. But then when you wake up and smell the coffee or the sewage or whatever, you realize that it's a planetary issue as well. There was just a report on global, you know, basically global dysbiosis.
That's one way to look at it, is that it's not just in our guts. It's a planetary dysbiosis that we're suffering. So what's today's intelligent medicine call to action? We have a variety of websites where people can access resources about you and your work. There's, of course, MarthaHerbert.org. That's the easiest one. What else is there available?
I have a website for my book, The Autism Revolution, whose subtitle is Whole Body Strategies for Making Life All It Can Be, and the website is autismrevolution.org. I have a pretty intellectual one called Autism Why and How, and I have Higher Synth, which is short for higher synthesis.org, which is my foundation and a couple of other entities that I do work from. And of course, Transcend Research. So those, my clinic, bodybrainresilience.com. And MarthaHerbert.org is where I have most of my intellect things, and then the other things are activities that I do.
And also, there's an opportunity not only for people to become patients,
and,
but also to become research subjects as part of the Body Brain as part of the Transcend project.
And we are, we have EEG research and other things in the clinic as well. Because my dream, as a brain researcher, I can do brain imaging of glutathione. I can do brain imaging of bioenergetic mitochondrial metabolites. And my dream is to track the brain biochemistry changes using those techniques alongside of the EEG, the upgradation of the brain by EEG. And so what we're going to be doing is baselines and follow-ups with some of these sophisticated technologies. We have a high-grade EEG in the office. And we are going to be making sure that we have sophisticated measures as well, and track them systematically so that when people get better, we can tell a story about them. We can do case reports. We can group case reports. And we invite volunteers and collaborators and so forth. And we're going to be doing structured studies. We've just been open a little while, so we are in a definite growth phase. I'm really excited.
Well, I'm tremendously excited by the work that you're doing. Right. I'm tremendously excited by the work that you're doing. And you truly are a pioneer in a field that's greatly expanding and that I think is going to have a major influence on not just our kids, but on society as a whole, because we really need to break out of the old paradigm and look for new solutions to the wide range of medical challenges, degenerative diseases that face us in this country. And you're really thinking out of the box, but bringing a great orthodox training to bear in validating some of these approaches, which we know work. So thank you very much, Dr. Martha Herbert, for joining us. I appreciate very much. By the way, MarthaHerbert.org is a gateway to where you can find a lot of stuff. Sure, indeed.
I just want to say something. I'm sorry. I just wanted to say one more thing because I have passion about it, and I forgot to say it, which is I really think that community-based science is going to play an enormous role in the future, and community-based systems biology. And so I am very, very committed to providing resources for people to share their data. So are a lot of other people. I just think it's so important that we think of ourselves as community-based scientists who are using our human capacity to think in an organized way about problem solving. Not to put science on some high pedestal where you have to be an expert, but just using it as a systematic way of tracking and thinking about and problems and sharing that information. We're in an age and an epoch where we have a window where we can really, really make a difference together, even if the established science is not yet pulling its weight in terms of getting us out of the present crisis. So I want to encourage everybody in that way as well. And that's what I think the autism movement and so many other movements are ways of people saying, look, it's in our hands now.
Well, that's very well said, and I think that a call to action that we certainly can't ignore. Thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Martha Herbert. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.